What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another special edition of 3Y with EG3. I'm the host of the NASCAR podcast, Eddie Gritter III, as usual, and we're all about the latest in the world of NASCAR, Camry World Truck Series, Xfinity Series, and of course the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series, the three biggest divisions in all of motorsports. And it's very rare that I have a special guest on the podcast. Well, this week we're talking Pocono, and I have a special guest, and I don't want to butcher his last name, but I'm going to let him introduce himself to the podcast tonight. Zach, what is going on, my man? How you doing?
Doing well, Eddie. Thanks for having me on here. Zach Sterniolo, by the way. I know it's not the easiest last name I got, but I appreciate you asking me to be on here with you.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on, taking time out of your busy week. Pocono, a quick turnaround, some 6-7 weeks from the first race. How's the preparation going for you guys?
Well, we're definitely in full swing now. We're getting a whole bunch of emails from all the press releases coming out, trying to get our whole week planned and aligned, and just try to get ourselves situated for so that we're not totally blindsided by the time we get to the racetrack on Friday for Truck Series practice and the ARCA race.
Yeah, I totally forgot about the ARCA race. I know the truck race will be on Saturday and the Cup Series on Sunday. What time will the ARCA Series race?
Well, right now the ARCA race is scheduled for 4:00 on Friday afternoon. We won't be covering it for the Pocono Record, where I write, but just because we've got the Fan Fest coming up at 6:00 that evening as well. So there's a bunch of stuff going on at the track that's going to prevent us from covering the ARCA race. But yeah, so we got the ARCA race 4:00 on Friday afternoon. Then truck racing, I believe it starts at 1:00 on Saturday afternoon, with Cup qualifying coming after that truck race on Saturday. And then you get the Cup race started at about 2:30 on Sunday afternoon.
Okay, interesting. So a switch up, kind of doing things a little bit differently than in the past, saving Cup qualifying for after the race instead of doing it on traditional Friday. That's quite interesting.
For sure. And I know they experimented with this, I believe it was at Chicago, where the Cup guys qualified after the Xfinity race.
Mm-hmm, yeah, yep.
And it seemed to work well then, and I think it's better than what they did last year, because Pocono was one of the three tracks that tried qualifying on the same day as race day last year. I think they did it at Pocono, Watkins Glen, and Martinsville. And being there for where they qualified before the race last August at Pocono, it was cool, and I thought the fans were getting more for their dollar, but it definitely took away some of the emphasis of a race day, so I'm glad that they moved that back to Saturday and leave Sunday for the race itself.
That's good. Just to put all focus so all fans that come to the race on Sunday can have their focus towards that. That's very good. Before we talk any more racing here, I want to back up a little bit here. You're actually the first writer to be on this podcast. I didn't tell you that. So before we dive deeper, tell the audience how the road of how you got to the Pocono Record.
Okay, well, so I'm still fairly young. I'm going to be 24 next month. I've been with the Record, whether freelancing or on the staff, since I graduated high school when I was 18. I got very lucky along the way, and some great people here have really made it possible. So I guess I'll start with my first NASCAR interaction was my senior year was 2012. And that was the year that Pocono went that was the year that Pocono was repaved for the first time since the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And the first time that they shortened the race from 500 miles to 400. And I was just a curious race fan. I've been a fan since I was like 3 or 4 years old. And so always stuck with the sport. So when they made those changes, I think it was about March or so, I reached out to Brandon Nagelsky, who was at that time CEO and president of the racetrack. He had made himself super accessible on social media and always invited fan questions and whatnot. So I sent him an email basically just asking him, hey, what are your expectations with the repave and shortening the races? And I didn't really expect a response because I was just some random kid who happened to be emailing him. And he got back to me with a really thought out response, which was, I was blown away by. It wasn't very long or anything, but it was good quotes, genuine opinions. And I asked him if he minded if I wrote something, including those quotes. And I didn't know what I was going to do with it, but he gave me the go ahead. I wrote something up, showed it to my English teacher at the time, Miss Bellello, and she told me that she thought I should send it into the local sports editor over at the Pocono Record. And so I did, and not only did he respond to the email telling me that I can send him what I wrote, but once I did, he went through the entire article that I wrote, and in that added some advice where he thought that it was needed, and then underneath that had his whole revised version of it, which was really bizarre, and just, it was so much more than I could have asked for him to do. He did it so willingly for me to it was a huge teaching moment, and he had some encouraging words for me in that and told me to stick with it. So further down the road, a couple months later, after I graduated high school, I asked if there was anything I could do with the paper. They were looking for freelancers to cover high school Friday night football. I jumped on that, and I was freelancing and then working at a gas station nearby. And I did that, balanced both of those for about a year and a half. And then a part-time job opened up in the office, applied for it and got it, thankfully. And then 6 months later, the full-time sports writer left, and that opened another door for me. And my boss told me to go ahead and apply for it. He couldn't promise anything, but told me to at least put my name in the hat. And sure enough, November 2014, I went full time, and I've been fortunate enough to be with the record full time since. So it's been a crazy ride. But now I'm covering high school football and boys and girls soccer during the fall, boys and girls basketball during the winter, track and field and softball during the spring, and I get to cover NASCAR whenever the series rolls into Pocono. So twice a year to be around the garage and to be in the media center, it's surreal. It's a blast, and I'm grateful every day for it.
That's really awesome. Getting to cover a lot of high school sports there. You're listening to 3Y with EG3, Eddie Greer III, here with, I'm going to call you Mr. Zach from the Pocono Record. How's that?
That works perfectly for me, man.
Great. Are you a big fan of high school football?
I wasn't while I was in high school because our team wasn't all that great, honestly, growing up. But especially now that I've been able to cover it I'm going into my seventh year covering it this year. But it's been so fun to cover. It's been a blast, honestly. And Pennsylvania definitely takes its high school football seriously. So I learned that in a big hurry.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The states that I played, when I went to high school down in Florida, oh, yeah, high school football, that was no joke, that was for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So definitely happy that you're able to use your talents in multiple ways up there.
For sure.
All right, so turning our attention back to Pocono just a minute, for how many hours, since it's race week up there, how many hours do you preparation goes into the whole Pocono weekend for the two races?
That's a good question. I don't really have a solid figure for you there, but there's definitely quite a bit of time spent preparing for it. I would say not as much lately, unfortunately, just based on the fact that we don't have. We used to run a weekend tab section that would come out with with the regular newspaper that would basically be its own preview of race weekend with some stories of our own, some features of our own, but also some stuff from the NASCAR wire service as well as the Associated Press. We don't have the resources for that anymore. Unfortunately, the whole industry is struggling right now, which I think has been documented quite a bit lately. But
yeah.
But for me personally, I guess I don't spend as much time feeling like I'm preparing for it because I watch so regularly and stay so in tune with NASCAR during the regular season as it is. So I don't feel like I need to really take a deep dive into it. Nearly as much as maybe someone who isn't as big of a fan or doesn't pay attention to it as much throughout the regular season. So for me, it's a lot of just taking the time to figure out, okay, what stories am I going to focus my attention on? I'll take a look at the press conferences that are scheduled for the race weekend, see which drivers will be in the media center and doing those, so that way I can kind of figure out, okay, who can I talk to, what angle is there to take with who's going to be in there, and how can I make this interesting for readers. So whether that's using someone's quotes to preview a story or to maybe recap something that maybe happened last week that seems interesting coming into this weekend's event, anything really along those lines, I'll look at to at least give myself some sort of mental foundation going into it. And then I'll obviously talk with my photographer. I say my, he's our photographer here at the record. His name is Keith R. Stevenson. And I shout him out because he helps me a lot with the podcast I host here and does a lot of behind the scenes work here. So shout out to him. But so I was talking with him earlier this week, actually, just about, hey, we've got this going on Friday. And maybe we can get a photo gallery for this. And then Saturday, we've got this and this and this. So let's focus on something along these lines. So I don't really have a direct answer as far as the hours that go into it, but it's definitely, everything's certainly planned out.
All right. That sounds good. All right. So when preparing for this podcast, I went out of left field to see who I wanted to interview, things like that. And of course, I listen to the Jeff Gluck podcast every week, and a month and a half ago, you were on with Jeff Gluck, and that was a good episode to listen to. Obviously, outside of that, how's your relationship with Jeff Gluck?
Man, he's been so, man, I don't even know how to really put it into words. It's surreal for me to be able to call him a friend within the industry, really. About a week and a half ago, he and I had never hung out outside of the racetrack. I'd never seen him really outside of the racetrack. So I think, I forget whether it was 2014 or 2015, but I think it was 2015 when I met him for the first time. And, I'd been following his work when, he was over at Sporting News. And, I think by that time he was already at USA Today, but when I actually introduced myself, and I just asked him for some advice on what I should do to get into the industry, and I told him my story basically, and at that time particularly I was wondering, you know, is college going to, should I really consider going to college, because I've rolled into this right out of high school, was just fortunate enough to be able to do that. At first he said that he wasn't really sure that he thought I needed it because I was already with a reputable newspaper. It's small town for sure, but it's something that gets published every day. And so, then he later introduced me to Dan Gelson of the Associated Press that same day. and we got talking, and, Dan told me his story. Long story short, at some point, Dan mentioned to Jeff that I would at some point get killed along the way if I didn't get a degree. And so that always stuck with me because Jeff was the one who relayed that to me after we exchanged numbers. And so I kept that in mind. And last January 2017, I actually started up at Northampton Community College, just a local community college near me, going for a journalism degree, because I figure, for me personally, I'd at least rather have the associate's degree. Okay. Getting back to the original question.
Yeah.
Jeff, that's all right. Jeff is someone who's really inspired me to do a lot within this NASCAR path and to really keep this journalism thing going for me. It's not easy by any means because it's a lot of stuff that, you know, obviously NASCAR is my biggest goal personally. It's hard to be patient sometimes.
Yeah.
And to find those openings when you see a lot of well-qualified journalists not have the opportunity to be out there covering the sport that they want to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jeff has shown that he's had a lot of confidence in me, and my ability, and knowing that I've had his support is just fantastic. He asked me to be on his podcast for the first time last August for that summer race, and that was the race that Kyle Busch got his first win of the season.
Yeah,
last year before he went on his tear,
mm-hmm.
And
right
for him to have asked me to be on that one was a blast, and that's actually what inspired me to start a local sports podcast over here. Shortly thereafter, and so then again when he came back for the June race this year, he asked me to be on for that one as well. And I definitely felt a lot more comfortable that time around, and again, just having support from someone like him, who's on the circuit on a regular basis and has the respect that he does, it's really fantastic for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. This, to have somebody take time out of their schedule to invest in somebody, that's good. And I can also attest to that a little bit about, you know, I'm not a journalist, but, you know, I'm part of the media field that it's one of the tougher places to get an opportunity to get a job where you want to cover this or to do broadcasts and do whatever. So for you to hang around, to stick it out, and to someone to come up and support your goals is huge.
It really is. It really is, and especially when you're seeing that support from someone who isn't necessarily there all the time to see it, but when a guy like Jeff is there and can take notice, and I don't want to just single, like, Jeff has been great. Don't get me wrong. Like, he's the only one I've been able to do anything professionally with at this point, but mm-hmm. guys in the media center, like Dustin Long from NBC,
yep.
Bob Pockers from ESPN, they've all been very kind and very gracious. Dan Gelson from the AP, they've all been very kind to me along the way as well, and super helpful whenever I've needed a question answered in the media center. So there's a lot of good people in the NASCAR media, and I hope that doesn't go unnoticed.
You're listening to 3 Wild EG3, hanging out with Mr. Zach from the Pocono Record. Here we are getting set for Pocono weekend. And Zach, you mentioned drivers in the media center earlier.
Yes.
Who's going to be in the media center this week taking questions?
Well, first of all, this is always subject to change. So
right.
Definitely isn't 100% for sure yet, but let me pull up the email here because I don't want to misspeak. I know on Friday there won't be any Cup guys in the media center just because that's going to be their quiet day, basically, but today is scheduled to start with Grant Enfinger, Justin Haley, and Brett Moffitt in the media center for the Camping World Truck Series. That's scheduled for about 11:15 a.m., and then no one else in the media center that day. But during the Pocono Fan Fest, which will be in the infield Friday evening from 6 to 9, Denny Hamlin will be there, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Joey Logano, Ty Dillon, Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, Chris Buescher, and J.J. Yeley. So plenty of guys to talk to there and a lot to dissect. I mean, you look at a guy like Chris Buescher, it's hard to believe it's already been 2 years since his bog-shortened win here at Pocono Raceway a couple
years
ago.
That was crazy.
it's bizarre to think that 2016 is already 2 years ago. But nonetheless, you also get a guy like Chase Elliott, and you can throw him and Bowman in the same conversation, who are right at the tail end of the playoff field right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Elliott, yes, sir.
And not for nothing, this has been a good track for Chase Elliott. There were, I think it was maybe the June race in 2016 when he really showed some muscle and made a pass on both Matt Kenseth and Kyle Busch for the lead. He led a bunch of laps that day. He's had some good runs here. Finished 10th back in June. He's a guy that was running pretty well last week at New Hampshire. You got to wonder when's that win coming. I don't think it'd be crazy to think it would come at Pocono, but I think he's got to be the first. He's not the best Chevy right now, and I think everyone can agree that Kyle Larson has been the most consistent and the fastest Chevy all year. So I think he's got to get through him first if you want to get a Chevy to victory lane.
Yeah. And speaking of Chase Elliott had a great run last week at New Hampshire, passed Martin Truex Jr., one of the big three, led a couple laps there, and I go back to last weekend on the practice charts. He was like, he said something that he was like 22nd or something in practice, and then that top five that he got last week was a total shock. So Chase Elliott, we've been waiting and waiting for him to finally get that first win. It's only a matter of time. It's just a matter of when he's going to finally break through and get that first win.
Right. And he's capable, I think, at any point, but I think Hendrick as a whole has to improve and get better before you can really say that they're going to be threats for a win. Now, I know at the end of, I think it was stage, I forget which stage it was, maybe it was stage one, but that Elliott and Johnson were running second and third. So they were up there for the first time in a long time, but they've got to find consistency first, mm-hmm. and I haven't seen that yet to really buy into that. Speaking of Hendrick Motorsports, looking ahead to Saturday, 8:15 in the morning, Jimmy Johnson is going to be in the media center for some press conferences. Eric Almirola in there at 8:30. He's another guy who had a great run and probably should have won that race last week. And then Jeffrey Earnhardt will be in the media center as well Saturday morning at 10:45.
All right, so I want to go back real quick before we talk some more NASCAR. You mentioned several times about the Pocono Fan Fest, and I saw on Twitter when I got home from work yesterday that JJ Yeley was a late gathering, if you will, for this event. Can you tell the audience what this event is all about, and how many drivers are supposed to be here for that event?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of drivers going to be involved in this whole thing. Let me pull up the whole thing here, because there's a lot going on. I think Denny Hamlin and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. are going to get the whole thing started. Again, this is an event that's going to run from 6 o'clock to about 8:30, 9 o'clock, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
So 6 o'clock is going to be the start of it, which is really just going to be the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series haulers coming through the infield to basically parade through and start the whole deal. And then 6:30, Denny Hamlin and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. are going to team up for a golf challenge. I don't exactly know what the whole deal is with that, but we're all going to find out together, I guess. They're going to compete in a golf challenge, and it says that fans will be able to walk away with some ticket upgrades and a lot more. By the way,
no surprise there. About golf.
Right, exactly. And so 7 o'clock, Ty Dillon and Joey Logano will be doing an event that's voted on by the fans. And looking at the options here for the fans to vote on, I'm trying to find it, but I don't see any suggested things on the site that I'm on right now. But I'm sure that's there's going to be something interesting going on there with those guys. That's at 7 o'clock, 7:30. JJ Yeley and Chris Buescher will be will be amazed, I guess, by this local illusionist and mentalist, Denny Corby. So he's going to try and read the minds of these two drivers. Then at 8 o'clock, Chase Elliott and Alex Bowman will have a hungry fan throwdown. So the teammates will compete in a cooking competition. I think Dale Jr. and – I know Dale Jr. was part of a cooking competition at last year's Fan Fest, but I forget whether or not – oh, I think it was up against Ryan Blaney last year. Their mascot, Tricky the Fox, will select his favorite ideas, and the fans will vote on the event. And then live music begins at 8:30. So, plenty of stuff going on there at Fan Fest. Again, that starts at 6 o'clock on Friday night.
Okay, that's – if it's a competition – it's a competition about food. You can jump me in there because I love food.
Same. I'm hoping the media gets a chance to be a part of the taste testing crew.
That'll be fun if you guys have a chance to do that. Take part in that.
Yeah.
You're listening to 3 Wild EG3 hanging out with Mr. Zach from the Pocono Record. We get you set for a jam-packed weekend in the Pocono Mountains. And now, Zach, we finally talk more about racing. Speaking of Henrik Motorsports, that's been well-documented about their struggles, especially with the Camaro. But I want to flip it to the other side of the coin, and the talk of this season has been about Stewart Haas Racing. Eight wins combined. Harvick got a sixth win last week. Bowyer has two wins. Kurt Busch has been competitive as of late, and Eric Almirola has been on a resurrection tear in that 10 car. What are your thoughts about Stewart Haas Racing up until this
point? I'll tell you what. I feel like they have been, I would say outside of Harvick, they have been the most underrated team because I feel like Joe Gibbs Racing gets a lot of credit for Denny and Kyle's success, and Eric Jones has had some shines of success. But I feel like generally, those Fords over at SHR have been just phenomenal. And I think it's more impressive because Penske hasn't had that same level of success with the Fords, even though the Ryan Blaney's been up there leading laps earlier in the first half of the season. Looking at SHR particularly, Eric Almirola is the guy that stands out for me. I said it on Jeff Luck's podcast, maybe a little bit prematurely last month, that he would be a guy that could go out and I said then that I didn't know if they could pull off two wins. Eric's now had probably two races that he should have won, including last week at New Hampshire.
I was just about to jump on and say that. He's had two opportunities to win in. Unfortunately, the pit crew hasn't held their end of the bargain. Back in Chicagoland, they had loose wheel problems, and then last week, even with the changes of the pit crew moving some pieces around their organization, they still couldn't come up to the plate when it mattered. And Eric Almirola, it kind of translated on track. He couldn't get going, and that cost him the race.
Right, exactly. And I think part of it, just watching the pit stop and seeing what I was able to see, it almost looked like his pit crew was taking its time trying to make sure that they got all the lug nuts tight, because loose wheels are what killed them at Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same token, that's obviously what lost him the track position, because that put him on the inside line restarting third on coming to the green flag, and then he loses and then he spins his tires because he was trying to be, I think, aggressive, trying to make up those spots right away. I don't know if he didn't spin those tires, if he would have been able to catch back up there, but I don't think that he would have fallen back near as much as he did.
Mm-mm. No, I don't think so either. And if Almirola, if the pit crew executes the way they could have, I know they probably played it safe, but if they executed the way they're probably capable of, Almirola's up there probably starting on the front row with Kyle Busch and giving him a run of his money. Speaking of Kyle Busch, Joe Gibbs Racing, obviously they're led by Rowdy, but it's been a mystery to me to figure out Denny Hamlin. Daniel Suarez ran good in the first half of the year, but Denny Hamlin runs good at Pocono. But for some reason, I don't know what it is. And Denny Hamlin, Suarez, Eric Jones has that win at Daytona. Well-deserved. But Denny Hamlin, that's been a big question mark. He has only two playoff points And Denny Hamlin's got to get it going. He said it himself last week that he needs to get more playoff points as we're quickly approaching the playoffs.
Yes. And it's very interesting you bring that up because Hamlin is so... Really, it's been the story of the last couple of years with him is that he's not dominant really anywhere we go anymore, anywhere the series goes anymore. He certainly had his run at places like Pocono, places like Martinsville, and he's still very good at those places. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that he's not, but certainly at Pocono, he hasn't won since 2011. He won there four times between 2006 and 2011. But since the repave, it's been really nothing. He's had good runs. He's run top 10. He was running about top 10 or towards the back end of the top 10 last month when he wrecked with Alex Bowman. But when you look at his season overall, I don't know. It's a lot of up and downs. He's certainly up there as a top 10 car, I would say, consistently. But you're not going to win championships and certainly not races by running eighth or from sixth back to 12th. He's got to start getting up there to that third to fifth range where he can put himself in position to strike if he wants to win a race soon. I think he's capable of pulling a win out really whenever, as soon as they find something, much like Truex did back in June. Truex was kind of quiet for the first 10 or so races of the season until he got to Pocono. I know he already had the win fairly early at Vegas, and they had been running top five most of the season anyway. Mm-hmm. But really, it wasn't until Pocono where Truex jumped out. Hamlin really has been quiet, and I don't know if he's going to get to a point. Certainly not. I don't think soon enough to really put himself into the mix. Granted. I say that now. It wasn't until this point last year that Kyle Busch won his first race of the season.
Yeah,
but at the same time, Busch was running second quite a bit for that before he finally broke through at Pocono.
Mm-hmm. Listen to Three Wild EG3. Yeah, that's interesting. You brought that up. I want to touch on and to correct you here for a minute here. Truex dominated at California, Fontana. So that Vegas.
Oh, that's true. You're right.
Yeah, Harvick killed the field at Vegas. So yeah, just to correct you there.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. No problem. The big three: Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, and Martin Truex Jr. These guys have been like Pac-Man, gobbling up these. I say it all the time on the podcast. They have gobbled up majority of these playoff points, some 88 in total when you combine the three. Have you seen anything like this in your time covering NASCAR to this point?
No, definitely not, and obviously not since they began. Obviously, I know this is only the second format or year of this playoff format, but mm-hmm. I mean, it's phenomenal, really, to see three guys going really racking up as many wins as they are. Forget about the playoff points for a second, which is 88 playoff points at this point of the year among three drivers is just astounding. But when you look at just the race wins alone and consider what they've done, it's phenomenal. I certainly haven't seen anything like this. Certainly not among just a select few drivers. I do think back to 2008 when I think it was Kyle Busch and Carl Edwards going back and forth. I think Edwards ended the year with 9 wins to Busch's 8. But even then, you had two guys going for it. Neither one of them won the championship.
No, this is crazy.
Johnson was just that dominant in the playoffs. And which kind of goes to show you that, you know, anything can still happen regardless of how many playoff points they have.
Right.
But I mean, it's just been amazing to see what they've done throughout these first few, the first half of this year.
Yeah, and going back to the first race a month and a half ago, the big three, Harvick, Kyle, and MTJ, were up front battling for the win, which Truex got that win in the first race. So now, just kind of looking into the future a little bit, I've listened to a couple of podcast, and Steve Letarte said that one of the big three will not make it to Homestead. So
I heard him say that recently.
Yeah, and then another person said that also. So that leaves me to my next question. Will the big three all make it, or will one of them fall out? And if who has the best chance to get to Homestead?
Man, that's a good question. If I have to think about it, I would say right now, the guy that I would put the question mark at is, oh man, I don't even know, because really, when you look at Kevin Harvick, he had gone, I know it doesn't feel like it, but he had gone quite a while between wins 5 and 6, mm-hmm. compared to as quick as he got the 5.
Yeah.
He wasn't in the mix as much at Chicago as I expected him to be, which is a mile and a half track. Same thing at Kentucky. Truex really ran away with that. So I think of the guys of the big three, I think the biggest threat on a mile and a half is still Martin Truex Jr., and Kyle Busch is a very, very close second. So of the three, I think the biggest question mark is probably Kevin Harvick. Which doesn't feel right to say when you look at the season that he's having. I don't know if you can really question anything that any of these guys are doing. But, oh man, you do feel like it'd be too good to be true for all three of them to get to to Homestead and battle it out between the three of them. Especially with as topsy-turvy as the playoffs can be, especially that round of 8.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Coming from a Martin Truex Jr. fan, I'd like to see him make it back to Miami and defend his championship. But I've heard some people have already said Kyle Busch. A lot of people said Kevin Harvick. So that's kind of interesting to hear your perspective there. Yeah, but it's really, it's a lot can happen, especially with the change in the playoff schedule, especially that first round, the Roval. You got Las Vegas to open up the playoffs. Then you go to Richmond, and then all heck's going to break loose at the Roval.
That's
going to be a crazy race.
A mess to watch. And I, like, from a fan's perspective, especially if I was a newer fan, that's one I would circle just because it's going to be such a mess. I would imagine. I feel like at this point it's either going to be a mess or it's going to be single file follow the leader because people are going to want to play it too safe. Although we saw a lot of guys during the testing already bust their tail ends by themselves, so it's going to be very, very interesting to see the outcome of that race. But you're right, that first round, and I've forgotten that all three of those races in the first round are different this year.
Mm-hmm.
Between Vegas, the Roval, and Richmond. That's going to be a very interesting round that can really, just based off the Roval alone, shake up the entire outlook of these playoffs.
Well, definitely, that's for sure. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to 3Y with EG3. Eddie Greer chatting it up with Mr. Zach from the Pocono Record here. And we got a few more minutes here on this episode here with you guys tonight. Zach, going back to last week, the contact between Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch, did you see that? Did you watch some of that race last week?
I did. I was able to see actually, I tuned in really exactly when that move was made. I was going to a concert with my girlfriend that night, and I happened to pull it up on my NBC Sports app just in time to see that move. And honestly, I thought it was fair game. I thought it was a clean move, definitely earlier than everyone expected Harvick to make that move. But I thought it was, I didn't think it was too much or too soon. I thought that, you know, Harvick was doing what he had to do, and he was right. He had to get away from Kyle as quickly as he could, because otherwise he knew Kyle would do the same thing back to him. And as soon as you get out of that the traction substance that they're putting down there, the PJ1, you're kind of done for that corner.
Yeah, that's for sure. And then Kyle Busch goes on to say, "How you race is how you get race." It's pretty much interesting for me because these two have kind of a history at this racetrack, going back to when Kevin Harvick raced for Richard Childress Racing, and Kyle Busch, they had a little episode then, and now, coming off that epic battle in New Hampshire, you bring that here to Pocono, which is going to be pretty interesting. And then, not only that, it goes back to last summer's race, where the two of them battled out for the win, which Kyle Busch knocks Kevin Harvick out of the way. What do you expect that is going to happen?
Man, that's a great question. First of all, Kevin Harvick has been so close to winning here at Pocono since he joined SHR. He's finished second here, I think, maybe five times or so. I think five, something like four or five times.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, since 2014, which is remarkable on a track that he had long struggled before. That being said, Harvick even said it out during the post-race conference last summer, whatever it was, that he got loose and he was more or less in Kyle's way, much like Kyle said that he was in Harvick's way during last week's race in New Hampshire. So I also saw this morning the conversation that, or the interview that Harvick had on NASCAR Race Hub last night, and they were talking about the rivalry between the two of them lately. And he called it a respectful rivalry, and it's been interesting to see that dynamic change between the two of them, because if I remember correctly, they hated each other at some point.
Oh, yeah.
And to see them going at it cleanly now and not absolutely hate each other's guts is kind of weird, but also cool to watch, to see how that develops. By the time they get to Pocono, it'll be interesting to see what Kyle can do with Harvick, and really what Harvick, if he'll be able to pull it off this week and finally find his first Pocono win. If there was any year that he's destined to do it, it certainly feels like this would be the one, with as good as he's been everywhere they're going.
Oh, yeah.
But I think this week certainly feels like another Big Three weekend, and it'll be interesting to see if Kyle takes any exception to what Harvick did last week. But I doubt there's going to be many repercussions off of that.
Yeah, especially on a track like Pocono, you don't want to be doing that, especially going at high speeds.
True, but we have seen some bump and runs at Pocono in recent memory, too.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, that's true. You're right, Zach. You're right on that. Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see what happens there up there on Sunday. Real quick, turning the page to the trucks real quick. They raced on Saturday, and I kind of named these guys the Big Three. Johnny Sauter, Noah Gregson, and Brett Moffitt have had some good season this year. Sauter's been on a Harvick S tear up until recently, but what do you expect the trucks to happen on a Saturday with Kyle Busch in the field?
Well, I'll tell you what, those KBM trucks have been really good at Pocono in recent years. William Byron won there a couple of years ago in that truck, and Kyle Busch seemed destined to win last year's race before he got taken out by Justin Haley going into turn two. So it'd be hard-pressed for me to say that another Kyle Busch Motorsports truck won't win this weekend, but especially with how Sauter's been running in that 21 truck for GMS and for Brett Moffitt in the Hattori 16, I don't see any real surprise winners coming out of the truck series this weekend, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Interesting. And going back to the Harvick for 1 second, yes, I slightly forgot, with all his success, that he hasn't won at this track yet, but if he's destined, the season that he's had to this point, I would think this would be the right time to do it, especially Ronnie Childress, Kevin Harvick, and that four bunch. They got something going on this season. Real quick, I know you have a busy night ahead of you, and I'm going to leave you with this, and I'm going to let you off the hook. You don't have to pick a winner here for the cup race, because it's a little bit too early in the week, but give us a couple of dark horses to look for this race, for this Gainer Outdoors 400 on Sunday.
Well, I think you got to look at a guy like Ryan Blaney, who got his first career win here last June, June 2017. He ran a great race that day. I think he's certainly capable of doing it. I know coming in, I don't know if this is still true right now. I haven't checked yet this week, heading into this weekend, but Coming into last June's race, Blaney was third in most laps led this season, behind Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick. So he seems to have lost a little bit of that edge lately, aside from his second place finish. I believe it was at Kentucky where he finished second. If they can find some momentum for that 12th team, man, I would not put it past Ryan Blaney to win again. Kyle Larson has been very good here. He's finished in nine starts. He is not, aside from the broken drive shaft last summer, he's never finished worse than 12th. And he finished second here back in June. I think Larson, if he can find a way up to the front, can do it. Can find a way to do it. Eric Almirola is not very good here historically, but much like Kevin Harvick, when he jumped to SHR, all of a sudden here's some success. Almirola only qualified 34th back in June, but drove his way up to a 7th place finish last month. So I think I would say Blaney and Almirola and Larson are my I don't know if you can call Larson a dark horse, but certainly Blaney and Almirola. I don't know if you can really count out Joey Logano or Chase Elliott either, because both of them are very good here. Logano has the one win back in 2012. Elliott's led laps here. I think there's a lot of guys that could pull off a win, but I also don't think that you're getting. I also don't think they're going to be able to beat the big three. I really haven't seen anything that's very convincing at this point, because even last week you had Busch and Harvick fighting out for the win there. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but I would definitely put money on the big three if I was gambling, which I'm not.
If I was in Las Vegas, I would definitely do that as well, because that's the same thing that I'm thinking right now also with the 78, the 18, the 4. It's kind of hard to bet against them right now, but yeah, I'm also looking at Eric Almirola. I'm interested to see what he does coming back here, especially with the momentum they have. They have really fast cars right now. Chase Elliott, it's well documented. I'm interested to see what he does. And I'm going to throw this one out there. Brad Keselowski.
Yes.
The whole strategy game. It could come down to strategy on Sunday. And Paul Wolf, nobody does it better, in my opinion, than Paul Wolf and Brad Keselowski going outside the box to try to steal a win from the big three.
I would agree with you 100% there. Keselowski knows how to win a Pocono. He won there in 2011. Back in 2014, one of those races that Junior won probably should have been Keselowski's if he didn't try to clean his grill off of Dan Patrick's rear bumper. Keselowski's a great pick for this as well.
And my last question of the night for you, what's the most event that you're looking forward to this weekend from a busy weekend?
Man, that's a great question. It's up there between the trucks and the cup race. I think the trucks always put on a good show, but I don't feel like their show is as long as it could be. I would love to see that race be even, I don't know, just a handful of laps longer than it is. I think it's only about 60 laps or so. That being said, I still got to go for the cup race. I don't know if it's going to be the best show of the weekend, but for me, it's always the most interesting to see just how everything develops, whether it's through pitch strategy or through on-track action. You always tend to get a lot of drama over 400 miles here at this racetrack, and I think bumping it down from 500 miles to 400 miles is the best thing that place has done. Certainly within the last two decades.
Yeah, I'm happy that, yeah, that was back in those days, the 500, those races seemed like forever, especially on this type of track, but I'm glad that it's now down to 400, and yes, I'm definitely interested to see what happens. We've had exciting races except Kentucky in the second part of the regular season, so definitely with all the storylines going up there in the Pocono Mountains, I'm interested to see what shakes out after 160 laps up there.
Absolutely, you and I both.
Well, Zett, thank you for hanging out with us tonight on this edition of Three Wide, and thanks for playing this out. Hopefully we can do it again soon.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me on here. I really appreciate you asking.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good week.
You too, Eddie. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That was awesome, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, 3YEG3. Eddie Greer III. He was the guys for a few more minutes. 3YED NASCAR Podcast, Tampa World Truck Series Xfinity Series, and of course, Monster Energy Cup Series, getting you set for Pocono this weekend. And let's all don't forget about the Xfinity Series, ladies and gentlemen. They'll be in Iowa getting their short track on this weekend as well. That, I believe that's Saturday as well. So a jam-packed Saturday. And I forgot about the ARCA race. Why did I do that? But that, well, that was awesome. Rarely do I have special guests on this podcast, Big D. And that was a great conversation right there. That was a lot of fun. Hopefully we can have him back here in the later this year sometime. So that was a fun interview right there with Zach S. I'm going to butcher this last time I say it. I know I'm going to do it, but Zach, Mr. Zach from Pocono Record, joining me tonight on a special edition of the 3YED NASCAR Podcast. And yeah, he said something interesting right there. I've been hearing it for the last several weeks, the big three talking about the 78, 18, and 4, one of them not getting there. And I explained myself on the podcast recently. As much as I want to see that happen, and we've seen crazier crap happen in these playoffs, and I brought up the fact that the first round is going to be all hell breaking loose, especially what I'm thinking is going to happen. Boy, it's going to really shake some trees up, especially if we don't see the usuals win. But going back to last week real quick, Big D, the 4-18 rivalry, I think, has been rekindled a little bit. Yes, it's not the Harvick of old, you know, going back a couple years ago, what started it all, really. Well, it really goes back even to before Darlington a few years ago, when the Southern 500, when they both wrecked Kyle Busch making contact with Harvick, and that spurred a lot of heat from Harvick. Harvick was pissed off and goes on to Trackside Live. That was a few years ago. Said what he had to say there, and then intimidates Kyle Busch. Side by side, this was all with Richard Childress Racing, and then so they did. These two guys got a history with one another, and if these two focus on each other long enough, I mean, the other equation, the big three, 78 Martin Truex Jr., is going to come up and take the fight to both of them, and that's what he did in the first round of Pocono, winning that race on Cole Pern, saying stay out on the racetrack. And I wish I had a few more minutes with him, but he has his hands full this evening, so he would have stayed on a little longer to chat some more. But that was a great conversation right there, Big D. We got to do that again, hopefully sometime later, probably in the playoffs sometime right there. That was our first chat right there. We've chatted a little bit on Twitter and things like that. But yeah, I forgot, and I kind of forgot to ask him where to follow him on Twitter, but that's all right. But anyways, though, great segment right there. And this will be posted up tomorrow morning, so you'll be hearing this tomorrow as soon as it gets posted, as usual. And you can hear the rest of our episodes as well as get set for the Iowa Pocono weekend this weekend. And yes, I brought up Brad Keselowski. He had a bad week last week, hopes to rebound, and those young guns, they got to start stepping up at some point. You know, we've seen here and there with Kyle Larson, of course, leading the way, in my opinion. Blaney's been up there. a former winner at this racetrack, Chase Elliott. Definitely, I'm gonna be paying attention to. I know we're probably gonna be saying this again later this week, Big D. But I'm gonna tell you what. I want to see. We all want to see Chase Elliott win at some point. It's just a matter of a week when we're gonna see it. And the fans, they're on their feet when Chase Elliott made that green flag pass on Martin Truex last week. Finally won a stage. And Zach brought up something interesting as well. The Hendrick gang down there, the 88 extends his lead down there with Stenhouse having multiple opportunities down here. We'll get to this more on the game day edition of the 3-Wide podcast this weekend. But Jimmy Johnson, Chase Elliott, huge points days there last week in New Hampshire to some 90-plus cushion. And Alex Bowman, that cushion going into last week's race at New Hampshire was 9. Well, he doubled that, or I should say, he doubled that to 20 points. Now, you're talking 29-point advantage on Stenhouse. And I talked about strategy with Zach right there. And I keep saying this on this podcast, that strategy could pave the way for somebody outside of this top 16 to sneak up there and get it. I'm still not going to rule out that possibility right there. Even in the first round of Pocono this year, we could have seen somebody take some chances there. I remember Brad Keselowski doing that. That's why I bring his name up in the mix. He's going to try something to shake up that tree up there in the mix. And some of those guys that are battling to get in the playoffs or even that try to punch their ticket to the playoffs, going to have to try something different. And this, I think, is the track to do it. So I think I said this all along. I said Michigan and Pocono, somebody's got to start sticking up a tree a little bit. We're running out of races, ladies and gentlemen. And 6 more races. Can you believe it? 6 more races into the playoffs, and I'm not even talking about the big three. I'm talking about the guys outside of the big three needing to step up and get the job done. And the 10 car of Eric Amaro's pit crew, well, you just got called out again. Even with the changes, I know it's probably their first race as a team, but when you have to, and I listened to NASCAR America earlier today while I'm on the road, and I think Kyle Petty said this, that when the doors open, you got to go up in there and close it down. You're not going to have too many opportunities. It cycles. And you wonder, Eric Amaro's has had competitive race cars all year long. 10, or then that 10 car, the driver has been the difference. And of course, when you have speed in your race cars, that also helps also. But especially 2 as many races for that Eric Amaro team, and they couldn't come up close to deal there. And Amarola had the best long-run speed car in that race. Second to Harvick, I think, in my opinion. But this time is now. And you got to get plow points. And I know when the plow start, you know, winning is everything. And you win a race. If somebody outside the big three win a race in the playoffs, that could probably shake things up. Especially when you get to the round of 8, Big D. Yep. Everything can really shake up. So definitely, Amaro has missed out on some playoff points. Blaney, Zach talked about in tonight's interview, said still can't count him out. He's been running up front, finished second at Kentucky, led a bunch of laps earlier this year. He's kind of been inconsistent also. Zach brought up a good point about the Penske camp. They're not in the same area code as some Stuart Haas racing cars right now, and they're still not, in my opinion. They're chatting it up after Kentucky. Keselowski and Blaney saying, "We're close. Oh, we're close." But in my opinion, they're still not where they need to be, and they got 6 races to figure it out. And maybe Pocono might be the week that somebody shakes it up with the big three. 3Wild EG3. You can follow me on Twitter at 3Wide_FastEddie. Again, follow me at 3Wide_FastEddie and Podcast Central, baby. Audio Boom, Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, and
beginning one, Stitcher as well, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast from, and add 3Wide to your collection of podcasts every day. And folks, we're getting down to business this weekend in Pocono Mountains. Can't wait to see what happens there. And of course, let's not forget about the standalone race. Iowa is going down with the Xfinity Series. No Cup guys in that one. Thank goodness for that. That's going to be an exciting race on Saturday afternoon. Last time the Xfinity boys were over there, Justin Allgaier put the field to sleep, sweeping the stages and getting the victory there. So interesting setup there. And we'll be talking a lot more, Big D. Yeah, that's coming up. Pocono, Iowa. Cannot wait to talk more with you guys. But for now, we're going to wrap this thing up. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to this special edition of 3Wealth EG3. I thank Zach for setting this thing up due to his crazy week. I'm glad he was able to cut out some time. We were supposed to go an hour full. We're talking NASCAR and some other stuff, but I definitely understand he was on a page duty tonight, so he had to get done. But I really appreciate what he did tonight, and hopefully we can hop on again and chat some more, hopefully later on this year. We thank him from the Pocono Record for representing Pocono for tonight. Thank you, Big D, for coming over tonight, doing what you do. Eddie Greer III, thank you guys for tuning in tonight. And yes, this will be up first special guest of the year, and it was a dandy. I really enjoyed that. We gotta do that again some point this year. But for right now, ladies and gentlemen, we're closing the books on this edition of 3Wide. We will be back later on this week with some more coverage from Iowa and Pocono. For right now, Big D, let's close this thing up. We out. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon on 3Wide with EG3.